Welcome, everyone, to episode number 14 of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recording in kind of sunny, kind of warm, but a little bit cloudy Helsinki, Finland. I'm your host, Luis, and with me is your other host, Jonas.
Welcome.
In this episode, we have a very special episode because we have our first official top 10 of half a year. The way we want to do this is that we will rank the top 10 games that each of us has played in the first half of 2025. And we want to continue doing this every half a year in order to have at least a segment or a section that will be top 10 every 6 months or so. We have not been able to come to a good consensus with Jonas as to whether we should have top 100, top 50, or even top 10 lists of specific gaming categories, or whether or not that would add anything significantly important to our content or to our voice. So for now, to keep the top 10s relevant, and instead of having a generic top X number of games, we decided to time constrain it to games that we have played in the first half, second half, and so on of every year. And today we're presenting the top 10 games that we have played in the first half of 2025. So if we have a game that we like to play and we play constantly, it probably will make it to a significant number of these top 10s throughout time. And if not, then it might not appear, but then we think that this way the list will stay fresh and relevant to what we have been playing.
One thing I want to underline here is that these are not new to us games necessarily. So the idea is not that we rank the top 10 new to us games from the past 6 months, but you know, the best games that we have been playing in the past 6 months. Luis, why do you think this type of a list is good content for a podcast?
First of all, I think top 10 lists tend to attract people both to podcast content, but also to video content, to all the type of content. I think people tend to search for this type of content more often than not. So I think that's good for us to get listeners, but also I think it's good for our listeners to get a little bit of what we have been playing, what is fresh and new, because we also try to play new games a lot of times. So I think this is relevant both for us as content creators, but also for listeners that are looking for games to play or looking for recommendations. What do you think, Jonas?
For me, the big value in top 10 lists or top 50 lists, whatever the list number is that whenever I find a new YouTube channel or new board game podcast, I want to listen first or watch first those top 10 lists so I can kind of like suss out the tastes of that person doing the content. Because, you know, well, board game reviews are never subjective. Are never objective.
Mm-hmm. What? They're always subjective.
Yes, they are very subjective. Mm-hmm. And I feel that different people tend to like different types of games. So I'm not necessarily interested in game recommendations from a person whose tastes I don't, you know, align at all with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that's how I've been burned in the past, like actually seeing a new channel just because of a top 50, seeing games, trying games out that I thought because it was in a top 10, it would be like, oh, this is a good game. And it's like, oh, no, this game is definitely not for me.
And then to add to that thing of like, why not top 50 or why not just top 10 of all time? Why limit it to 6 months? Some podcasts or YouTube channels do this thing of like, well, it's like always top 50 every year. And then, you know, when you do it multiple years, the same games tend to get featured every time on the same list. And I think there is that question of like, well, why even do this top 50 list? Just go check previous year's top 50 because there's not a lot of, you know, things changing around. And then there's also this thing of like personal favorites. So games that you are not playing really anymore, but they have like such a dear spot for you, but you're not able to kind of like look at them clearly anymore because, you know, it's the past and you used to play it with your old friends and those were like the good times and this is why this game is good. Yeah. But now when you're evaluating other games, you might be evaluating them much more harshly or something like that. So this kind of like allows us to like ignore all of those games of the past, you know?
Yeah, it's like a lot of top 50s are like, oh, we have like, I don't know, Risk Legacy because it was so big, but I haven't, or Gloomhaven because I played it 3 years ago. And I'm like, but it's probably going to make it out of the list at some point, or it's going to go out of the top 10 because I haven't played it in 5 years or in 3 years or in whatever. So definitely this prevents us from doing that. So allow us to have stuff that we have actually played in the first half of 2025. So in the last 6 months or so. All right, so in this episode, we will not have any reviews. The way we'll go about it is that each one of us will mention our number 10 first. We will discuss it a little bit and then move on to the other person's number 10, 9, 9, and so on and so forth until we reach the top of the list.
What was the worst game you played in the past 6 months?
I think the worst game or the biggest disappointment for me was Far Away. I think it was a game that I wanted to play and that I wanted to like, and I got hyped and I bought. And then every time I played it has been kind of a letdown. And I've tried playing it with multiple number of people. So I think that was a big disappointment. What about you, Jonas? What was the worst game that you've played in 2025 so far?
For me, worst game was Misfits, the tactical stacking game. I had also very high expectations for that game. I'm not complaining that it's too simple or too light. I was looking for a extremely simple, dumb, fun dexterity game, but Misfits unfortunately wasn't that. The wooden blocks, there's too much friction. We played it over the holidays, and then later on this year, me and Chilla also tried to play it as two players to, you know, to do a little bit more messing with each other, to really try to push the game. And it was still not a particularly enjoyable time. And I just wanted to make it clear, I like dexterity games.
Yeah.
I really like
You love dexterity games.
Yes. But Misfits, no.
All right. What about the hamster wheel? That's still good?
That is still good.
Okay, then those are the bad games that we played this year. Now let's go to the 10 best game that you played in the first half of 2025.
Me and Chilla have been playing a lot of three Uwe Rosenberg farming games this year: Black Forest, Agricola, and Nussfjord Big Box. Honestly speaking, I like all of them, but Nussfjord Big Box is my current favorite of the bunch. Finding those combos from the buildings is so rewarding, and even though it's shorter and lighter than Agricola and Black Forest, there's still quite a bit of different mechanics in the game. And there's still plenty of novelty for me in the game even after 16 plays, since those available combos change a lot based on what deck you are playing with. And now with the Big Box, there's 7 decks, and you only see half of a deck in a two-player game, so I can easily see another 16 great plays of Nussfjord ahead of me.
All right, maybe asking you a meta question about this type of games. You've mentioned that you like to play Uwe Rosenberg and that you particularly like to play with Chilla. Is this a game so good that you would consider playing with more people, that you would consider bringing to a meetup or a weekend gaming night?
The interaction is this like blocking type of interaction. You block people from action spaces. And I'm not saying that these games don't have interaction, but since that interaction is limited to that blocking, I cannot see myself bringing these games to the meetups, especially since I get to play them at home with Chilla, and I just can't see the experience changing that much if I add a third or fourth or fifth player that you can do with Nussfjord Big Box. And, you know, if when it's outside of the host, you lose that kind of like cozy environment where you can just sip your tea and play with your elders and fishes.
All right. Is this the game that you would play probably most likely in second half of 2025 from those three that you mentioned?
From these three, yes. However, the chances that I will play all of these three games are pretty high.
All right. But not with me.
That was my number 10, Nussfjord Big Box.
All right. My number 10 is Pandemic Legacy Season 1. It's number 10 because we have not done many months. We started playing with a group of friends. We are currently in March, so it's still very early game. So I haven't explored many of the things. And already, like, of course, it's pandemic, so it's a good game. It's a good cooperative game. And already a couple of things that have happened are like, wow, this game seems to be a pretty good game. I have been traveling quite a lot, so we haven't been able to schedule more of these sessions. But for sure, I think this is a game that I would enjoy quite a lot in the second half of the year, hopefully, and we'll be able to finish. It stands up to the hype, at least from my current very limited experience. And just to be clear, I also played, in order to get the kind of the gist of it, we played like 6 or 7 games of Vanilla Pandemic with the same box before we started the campaign. So Pandemic Legacy Season 1 is my number 10.
I know you like a lot of these like campaign type of games.
Yeah.
Does Pandemic Season 1, does it stand out like compared to the other campaign games you have played?
It does. It does in the way that I don't think I've played a campaign game yet that is so simple, because all of the campaign games that I played are like Gloomhaven or Oathsworn or Sleeping Gods or something more complex. This is simple enough, but then the mechanics of the legacy thing enter into play and change a little bit. It's still a very simple game that is still kind of telling a story, but it's also, I'm playing this with my other group of friends that is not that heavy into board games. So it was really easy to convince them, and all of them are enjoying it quite a lot. So for sure, I think it stands out for that reason.
And I think there's something fun about having the world map on a board, because when you do add things to that world map, it's just like, because it's like real life, you kind of like, you can imagine the stories that those little stickers tell.
Yeah, for sure. And then the stories that we're telling there on the table, like, nobody cares about Mexico, just let Mexicans get the disease. Of course, I'm Mexican, so I can say that, but we make a lot of fun like that. Like, my friends are international group. So yes, we're telling a story with the game, and the game is helping us tell that story. So for sure, pretty interesting. So that was Pandemic Legacy Season 1, my number 10 of this list.
All Bridges Burning is the first coin game I played, and I'm really warming up to the coin system. I've also played a bunch of Vijayanagara, the Deccan Empires of Medieval India, online this year, which has made me confident that it's not just the theme of All Bridges Burning that's fun for me, but the interaction that's present in these coin games. The event cards and the action selection system really force players to think about what are others going for, which I find usually much more interesting than learning how to min-max your personal economy so that you can have the biggest and baddest army in the end of the game, which I feel like is the usual arc of many heavier area control or dudes on a map games. But as a Finn, the theme of All Bridges Burning is a big part of the enjoyment, and I get that not everyone is going to have a similar read of the game than me.
I personally don't have that read of the game. I played it once. I kind of like it. It made me for sure interested in other coin games, but I don't know. Interesting to hear that that's your number 9, but I guess it makes sense. I would have expected to see All Bridges Burning in your list, to be honest.
My first game of All Bridges Burning was also a horrible game. After that game, I thought to myself that, yeah, coin is not for me. And I think I mentioned this in the review that we had earlier this year. But after the first game, after you kind of like experience the rules and internalize them a little bit, I haven't internalized all the rules of All Bridges Burning, but I know enough that I know what is effective and what kind of things you kind of like want to achieve in the game. And then it becomes more fun.
Yeah, I get it. I can see that happening. But yeah, not for me right now, but that for sure. If you ever tell me, let's play Cuba Libre or something like that, I'm up for that.
That was my number 9. All Bridges Burning, Red Revolt, and White Guard in Finland.
All right. My number 9 is a bigger game than All Bridges Burning, a more complex game, and full of negotiation, and some people would call it an artistic game. This is John Company 2nd Edition. We have talked about it in the podcast. It's a game where you are representing families of nobility managing the East India Trading Company, and you are basically role-playing a person that does not care about anything but money and reputation and are managing the East India Company and making a lot of chaos in India. However, I think the latest session that we had was a really enjoyable session. As we discussed whether board games are art or not, and there's, I think, a big debate about this game in particular. And every time we have played this game completely and correctly, I think I've enjoyed the game. And this last session, I think it was one of those times that I enjoyed the most. I don't believe I won the game, but I don't remember. But I was playing it with you, Jonas. Do you remember that session that we had?
I do remember it very fondly. Maybe that was maybe the first play of John Company that I enjoyed thoroughly.
Yeah.
You know, from the start to the end. I have had some highs with John Company, but every game I have also had some really big lows. But this game was just like a great game.
Yeah, and it was, I think, we played it as it's supposed to be played. We had fun. We were role-playing. We were being petty about some decisions. We were being petty about the negotiations, which again is like, I think, part of the commentary of that John Company is trying to create. So yeah, I enjoyed a lot. I think there's still better experiences, better games that I played, and it's still a pretty heavy game, pretty like brain burny. So it ends up like at the end of the game, you're like end up feeling kind of exhausted. So that's why it's only on number 9, John Company 2nd Edition.
I don't have it in my list, John Company. And I think it's somewhere in the middle of the games I played in the past 6 months. But it's funny because it used to be like it would have been like lower on the list if you asked me like last year. But now I feel like I might be one game away from it being like in a top 10.
Yeah. I understand. Well, maybe we have to play it again. So that is my number 9, John Company. What's your number eight, Jonas?
My number eight is Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective, The Thames Murders and Other Cases. I had some notes about Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective when we were discussing couples games earlier this year, but after that episode, my appreciation for the game series has risen a lot.
Yeah.
First, I learned to understand what's possible in the world of Sherlock Holmes, which made it easier and less disappointing to solve the cases. And second, I learned that the game really expects you to sometimes make these leaps of faith in your deduction. And these leaps of faith can feel a bit frustrating in the beginning, but at some point you just learn how to think about the cases and you actually start to appreciate that the game is not holding your hand all the time.
Mm.
We've been lately doing cases from the original box after trying out West End Adventure and Carlton House expansions, and these cases seem a bit more solid and better structured than the average case in the expansions. So we also kind of started with the wrong footing with Chilla.
So yeah, that's actually super surprising. I was like, wait, didn't he hate the game, or didn't he at least didn't appreciate it at all? So what is it when you mean that you learn to understand the game? Is it that, the leaps of faith and the leaps of deduction?
Well, I think it's also partly understanding about all the different characters that you can always go to ask clues about, and then learning how to use the directory better. So kind of seeing like, oh, there was something mentioned about a poison somewhere. Okay, let's go check the medical records. Or we might be dealing with a weird gun here. Well, let's go check the gunsmiths.
Yeah, yeah, okay. The way we enjoy it, and I think I mentioned this before, is that we don't care if we match Sherlock Holmes or we don't care about the points. We care about kind of solving the case and maybe trying to find weird little clues about the things that are on the side, which you normally encounter throughout the case. And I think that's like the most enjoyable. It's like, no, but why is that? Why was that person there? Or something like that. And just kind of caring more about the world than actually winning the game. I think it makes the experience more enjoyable, for sure. That was super surprising.
That was my number eight, Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective, The Thames Murders and Other Cases.
My number eight is a classic game from Rainer Knizia, re-implemented recently with anthropomorphic animals. The game is a game of negotiation and it is called Zoo Buddies. I got a copy for myself and I played it with my office colleagues during a cottage retreat. We played it multiple times. And I think that it's a game that is so simple to understand, also so simple to play, and it can be played with 4, 5, 6, up to 7 people. And I think any number of people, the game mechanics work quite well with any number of people, I think at least with this group of people, of colleagues / friends from work. So I really enjoyed it, and that's why it's making it to the list. It was a very nice experience for me this year.
I'm jealous of you getting to play Zoo Buddies this year. I didn't play it at all last year. I struggle to find people to play it with. There's always someone or at least one person who doesn't like negotiation, and then Zoo Buddies never gets picked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super interesting because in my group of work, I'm the board game curator, and I have to select some games that are for, a lot of people don't like confrontation, so don't like these type of games, but I also have a lot of people that do like confrontation and games. So I have to kind of always select cooperative games, more party games. But every now and then, I'm able to kind of bring one of these and we find the time to play it. And this time we played multiple times there. So really enjoyable. So it's a recommendation. Play it with your office group in bigger settings where you can be like, hey, you five, you want to play a game? I'll show you the game. And it's relatively, I think, fast also to play. So it also doesn't consume that much time from any board game or side event that it's has a side of board gaming to it. So my number eight is Zoo Buddies.
My number seven is The Bottle Imp. The Bottle Imp is hands down my favorite trick taker I played this year. There are so many trick takers out there, so let me list all the trick takers and ladder climbers I played this year so that if you are really into the genre, you will have maybe a bit more context on how high I value Bottle Imp. In alphabetical order, I have played 3 Chapters, Apluxen, Cat in the Box, The Crew, Mission Deep Sea, Haggis, Milkuro, Mu, Potato Man, Rebel Princess, Skull King, and Yokai Septet. For me, the Bottle Imp offers the perfect amount of scheming, card counting, and pushing your luck, which means I get to feel really clever when playing it, but there is also always that element of luck, and having to think on your feet, which means I don't go on autopilot, but I kind of need to keep my eyes open on what's happening around the table. My first games of Bottle Imp were a bit lackluster, but I think this is a game that you kind of wanted to be patient with it, play games multiple hands so that the luck factor evens out and you kind of like are able to start thinking about the game more strategically.
I think I still have not played that game besides the first time you played it, like what, a year ago or something like that. We played it with Tomu. I don't know if you remember. That was the only time I played the game. We played a couple of times, I think. And I still enjoy it, but I can see playing it more how you would enjoy it even more. And you have talked very well about it. Now I'm interested. We should play it more often when there's three people.
Yep. And there is this, like, you pass cards in Bottle Imp. The game starts by passing cards, which is typical to many trick takers. And I feel that so much of the game happens in that passing. It's almost like two acts. The first game is just about like, okay, which three cards you pass?
Yeah.
And then you play the cards. And I remember like the last game I played of the Bottle Imp, it was me and Ellen like neck to neck. Who's going to win that game? Mm-hmm. And after the passing, seeing what card I got from Ellen and what card I passed to her, I was like, I won the game.
Okay. That is good. That is good to hear. I want to play it more often.
That was my number 7, the Bottle Imp.
My number 7 game that I played this first half of the year is Food Chain Magnate. Well, everybody knows that in Food Chain Magnate, you are trying to be a magnate of a food chain where you're trying to create a demand for your products and you're trying to make the most money by hiring people and put these people to work. We finally managed to play your copy of the game with like all of the little add-ons and the little things that you received. And I think that was perhaps the most enjoyable experience of Food Chain Magnate that I've had. And I've already mentioned Food Chain Magnate, I think, on my top 10 games that we play in 2024 at the beginning of the podcast. And this time around, I enjoyed even more, even though I made way more mistakes and I didn't do that well. I think I still managed to get some money. Yeah, it's a game that every time people suggest it, if we are 4 people, I think I would be happy to play. You played recently with 5, if I remember correctly. I've never played with 5. I don't know how it would play. Maybe you can comment on that. But I think you remember that play. I think you did quite bad in that game of Food Chain Magnate, which adds a little bit of cherry on top of the cake.
I did play Food Chain Magnate at 5 players this year. It's currently pretty popular with our gaming group, Food Chain Magnate. And I had kind of like, whenever there was 5 people, I kind of said, like, let's not play Food Chain Magnate. It's probably going to take a long time. It's probably going to be too chaotic. But we did try it at 5 players. And even though it was longer, even though it was more chaotic, and even though there was like quite a bit more admin and stuff having to, you know, stuff that you had to keep your eye on what's happening on the board, a lot of like, yeah, just like a lot of managing of the board state, it was also looser, which I think is a good thing for Food Chain Magnate, because sometimes it feels like it's just too tight. Mm-hmm. In meaning that, you know, the first 5 turns kind of like dictate who is going to win the game. But here it felt more like more things can happen. The game is not over yet, even if you are like have started with the bad footing.
I have still not played with 5, but it's good to hear that we could play it with 5 from what you're saying. You would not be against playing it with 5?
I would not be against, no. You also mentioned the add-ons that we have in the game. And by those add-ons, you mean like the geek up bits.
Yeah.
You know? I also have the expansion. We have not tried it yet because our game that we played this year, there was someone new, so we didn't want to bring in those expansion content. But I have gotten to play with the coffee module and with the night shift manager module. And already the coffee module is really great. It doesn't add a lot of like complexity to the game, but it's kind of like shakes things up.
Okay.
Like the coffee thing is kind of like a prevention strategy against the price wars, which can sometimes feel less exciting because then it just becomes a game of like, okay, who is able to
discount the most?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. That is my number 7, Food Chain Magnate.
My number 6 is Exit the Game, and particularly Kidnapped in Fortune City. Me and Jilla have played 9 Exit games this year so far. And out of these games, Kidnapped in Fortune City was my favorite, and it might even be my favorite exit game altogether. The reason why Kidnapped in Fortune City is so fun is that there is a good amount of puzzles that are very playful and physical in nature, meaning that you are not just trying to solve some number sequence with pen and paper, but instead cutting out pieces or constructing some simple cardboard structures. And the game has this formula of trying to solve a crime while you are solving the puzzles, which to me is a great way to tie in everything together and have a much bigger story element or a much coherent story, especially when solving the final puzzle of the game compared to the usual story formula of you are trapped somewhere and you need to get out. And the last puzzle is like, yeah, here's the door, try to get out.
Mm. Without burying the lead, because I don't want to ask too much about it, I'm asking about another. Have you played adventure games, which are also from Cosmos? I think Exit is...
It is a Cosmos game.
It's a Cosmos game.
We tried adventure games. Is it adventures game? Adventure games.
It's adventure games, I think.
Adventure games. This year,
yeah.
Adventure games, The Dungeon.
Yeah.
Chilla liked it. I was kind of let down by the game. It's much more simple, which I can appreciate if the story would be much better. But the story in the adventure game feels like this is like Exit great story, except it's just like the puzzles are not there and you're just like going around. And I feel like, hey, you know, add more story to the game and then I can live with these lighter elements.
Okay, I was going to ask because I've not tried any Exit game, but I tried with Mia adventure games, The Dungeon as well. And it was kind of like, it's okay. Yeah. I could play another one, but if I got it gifted, but I would not buy a new adventure games, for example. So I was also like thinking that the Exit games are equally like on the same, but you're saying that Exit games are...
They are a totally different experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. I will consider that for the future.
That was my number 6, Exit the Game, Kidnapped in Fortune City.
All right. My number 6 is a game that I've played recently. I tried to get from the library already a couple of times before, and I actually got it, but never managed to play it. Now I've played it, and I played it at all player counts, and this is Biblios. This is a fantastic game where you're like just trying to create the best library on your abbey or something like that in the 1200s or something like that, where you're like, you are monks trying to copy books and create the best thing. But in essence, you're just giving cards away, keeping some cards for yourself, adding some cards for the beat phase, and then having like, which is called the gift phase, and then later you have you're bidding on these cards in order to try to get the most of each color, in order to try to get a die, which whoever has the highest on the die, it's really hard. I'm really doing a really bad job at explaining it, but anyway, it's a simple card game where you're just trying to get the highest numbers, but the mechanics are quite simple, quite easy to explain, understand. Everybody can play it. And also, it's quite juicy. Like, there's a lot of like interesting decisions to make in every one of your turn and things to consider. And it helps if you have like a good like kind of visual memory where you kind of remember which cards people took. Yeah, and I think I was pleasantly surprised, and I think that's mostly why it's here. I've enjoyed the game. I don't know if it will make it again to this list, but at least I thought the game was not going to be as good as it had been hyped. At least by Board Game Barrage. And therefore, because I was pleasantly surprised, I think it made it quite high to the list. So,
I own For the King and Me, and I played that with family also during the holidays. I played For the King and Me this spring as well, and I played Biblios with you. I feel like there's a lot of arguing whether For the King and Me should even exist, given that many consider Biblios to be the superior game. In my opinion, I think Biblios is the better game if you're playing with kind of like hardcore gamers or gamers who really want to play the player.
Mm.
But the For the King and Me, I think it's a little bit more forgiving for mistakes that you can make in the game if you kind of like are not able to keep track of all the cards that are being like taken.
Mm.
So for families, I would recommend For the King and Me.
Got it. Yeah, for poor gamers like myself, then Biblios. But this is a library copy. It's not something that it's readily available, but luckily the library has multiple copies of this game, so I think it's not as hard to play if we wanted to. That is my number 6, Biblios.
My number 5 is Ra. I played Ra with my colleagues this year, and I had this perfect Ra game where there was lots of interesting mixtures of tiles coming up for auction, and in the end, we were really fighting each other to build the best position for ourselves. And it was just such a solid good time and the perfect game for that moment that I just had to include Ra in the list.
We played Ra a long time ago. I think that's the only time that I played Ra with you. I really enjoyed it, but at some point, I think during that game, it felt that the fate was set that it was not possible for me to win in certain categories. Because if I remember correctly, certain categories you have to have the most of something in order to get points. And I was like, okay, there Jonas is winning, there Mia is winning. So it felt a little bit like very hard to get to a good position on the last round. Has that ever been your experience?
No, not really. And I think there's only like a couple of scoring conditions where only one person gets to score a lot and no one else gets to score anything. I think most of the scoring conditions are such that you are perfectly happy coming second or third.
Okay.
And when, you know, you might be very happy of like just collecting a little bit of points everywhere instead of like investing in one, you know, one particular thing.
Yeah, I think that's one of those games. It's up to five, right?
It is up to five.
I think it's one of those games that you should bring to the meetup or the weekend games more often. I think we should play. I would love to play that one more often.
I have never had a bad game of Fra. At worst, it's just a cute time.
Yeah, you should recommend it more often when we have four or five players. Well, maybe you want to play something juicier.
Yeah, I think usually we tend heavier. To go for something heavier, you know, because it's. I don't know if there's enough for just kind of like the main event game. It's a game that usually gets played when we see that, okay, we have 1 hour left. Hey, let's play Ra.
Got it.
That was my number five, Ra.
My number five, it's a game that I hadn't played in over 3 years, but I dusted it out and we played it recently and we had the best of time. And I remember why this is a great game and why I should play it more often. Some people say that this is not really a game, but it is Micro Macro. And in particular, the box is Crime City. I also have the second box, which is Full House, but the one that we just finished all the cases is Crime City, where you have like a big map and you're just basically searching the map for clues of what happened to the murder. And in the map, it's just a single picture, but in the picture, the people appear multiple times. So you follow them around and try to discover the clues as to what happened, why they're murdered. So it's like, Where's Waldo combined with a little bit of Chronicles of Crime or Sherlock Holmes Detective, very, very light, super family friendly. We play with Mia and we just have the best time with it. And it's a fantastic game that I think people have forgotten, even though I think in every convention they still have a booth here and there because they keep coming up with expansions. And I think now there's like cases that encompass the bigger map, which is comprised of like all the four first versions of the game that came out. Just talking about it, I'm getting excited to play the second book and buy the third and the fourth and look out more of Micro Macro.
We have also been playing a lot of Micro Macro with Chilla this year. I thought that I wouldn't enjoy the game that much because I don't really like those Where's Waldo challenges. Mm. But this one is just much more fun because you are like trying to like track down the perpetrators in the city. To prevent those crimes or like, not preventing the crimes, solving the crimes. Well, sometimes you get to prevent something bigger like to happen. But the reason why it's not in my top 10 is that, okay, we did a lot of other deduction games and it's just, you know, in that it was like a tough competition for Micro Macro this year.
Yeah, I have played other deduction games this year. I don't think I have played that many that I would put them on the list. So this is actually my top deduction game, if I may already spoil a little bit of my list. But yeah.
And you mentioned the other boxes. We are now on our third box. No, we finished our second box. The thing is, the basic nature of the cases doesn't change that much.
Yeah.
So it's still kind of like the same thing. And I think it's just very difficult to kind of innovate with that concept.
Yeah, for sure. But it's still like, it's simple. It's easy. You can play one case or three or four. Yeah, that is Micro Macro, my number five.
My number four is Seven Empires. This goes back a little bit to what I said in All Bridges Burning, but I really enjoy reading the board in area control games instead of building my personal economy. And Seven Empires feels like the game that's just about reading the positions of your opponents. I have seen some players getting tripped up by the fact that you have very limited control over the empires you have influence in. But to me, the challenge of the game is trying to control the alliances you have with different people first, and then what's happening on the board second. Meaning, most of the time, I am looking at what others are owning, seeing who do I have the most shared incentives with, and then trying to work an edge over those players, meaning finding some way where we can keep working together in a way that I will come on top at the end of the game.
Yeah, definitely. I do not have much to say about this game. I really enjoy our play of it, but I've only played it once. How many times have you played it now?
I have played it 5 times now.
Yeah, that's a game where I felt I got somewhat bamboozled into very bad alliances. As you say, like you're trying to control the alliances. And I think if you're not aware of that, you can have like a really bad play. You can make bad decisions at the beginning. And that kind of messed up my experience with it, but I would really love to play it again in order to understand that with maybe some tips and tricks from you.
Yep. I only have 2 words for that. Get good.
Yeah, sure.
That was my number 4, Seven Empires.
Well, my dad is not a big board gamer. We used to play a lot of, I don't like this term, but a lot of Ameritrash when I was younger. The Monopolies, the Risks, the Game of Life, the Kimball, which it's Sorry, the version that we used to play, it's Sorry. We used to play a lot of these games that are like, you don't have a lot of agency in your turns. You're just playing by luck. And that's the type of game I think that my dad is used to when we talk about board games. So little by little, I tried to convert him into heavier games. But it's really hard, a very complex game for him to enjoy. He might want to play it just to see, but then he doesn't enjoy if it has a lot of complex decision-making. So he was visiting recently, and I took out the Quest for El Dorado. And I don't remember the last time that he was asking to play a board game instead of me trying to convince him to play a board game. And this time around, he really enjoyed it. He was wanting to play it more and more and more. And the Quest for El Dorado is like a simple deck building game that is easy to understand, easy to see, easy to also get excited about, to see like if you're winning, get frustrated, like all the emotions that a game, the board game mechanics can create in you. And I think this was the sweet spot of the type of games maybe that I should play more often with him. From there, I can maybe introduce heavier games. So really enjoyable experience with Mia and my dad playing Quest for El Dorado multiple times recently. And of course, I played before, but I haven't played in a while. But then it reminded me why this game was so good and why this game is well-liked.
I love Quest for El Dorado. It's just like the pureness of deck building is like so present there, even though you have that race going on the board, but it still feels like it's just about the deck and what you're putting into it.
And funny enough, I bought it the first time I went to Essen just to get a card from Lorcana. Like I think you needed to spend 50 euros in the Ravensburger booth in order to get a Lorcana card for free from Essen, which not worth it at all. But like, that's the only reason. I was like, okay, well, I don't have the Quest for El Dorado. That's the only game that is not in German and I can play. So really happy about that serendipitous purchase.
Which version of Quest for El Dorado do you have? Do you have the one with the Vincent Dutrade art or the original?
I have the one with the Vincent Dutrade art.
Because if you have the one with the Vincent Dutrade art, now there is that box that combines all the expansions. It's being released this year. I'm really tempted to get that because I kind of like want to add more cards to it.
Yeah. But does it really need it?
I think after you are in those double-digit plays, you might appreciate a little bit of changes or new cards to add to the mix.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Or at least that's where I'm with me and Jill.
Do you only play it with you two?
Yeah, we're playing it only with us two. Okay, the reason why I don't bring that game to the meetups or play it with other people is because I'm just going to win every game I'm going to play with people who are playing for the first time. Because it's just like you do not know of all the things that you should be doing with your deck. So there isn't that tension there if you're playing with newbies.
All right. So that is my number 4, The Quest for El Dorado.
My number 3 is Sidereal Confluence. I had 2 games of Sidereal Confluence this year, and I'm now over the absolute cognitive overload the game has on your first place. Especially by the second game of this year, I was doing super fun deals with people since I had these converters that I couldn't use myself, but others could use, so I basically had to first identify the people who could benefit the most from these converters and then try to sell them on the idea of borrowing these converters from me. And this actually required people to kind of like save up cubes to buy bigger research things later on, so I had to really do this thing of like, hey, think about 2 turns ahead. Like, don't just get those quick wins now. Think about what you could do with the long term with my converters. I think I ended up coming in last in that game, but this is definitely a game that you can have lots of fun with even when you are losing as bad as I was.
I hear you. How many, like, you have played this after the last play that we had together?
Yes, one time. So I have altogether played 3 times CD Real Confluence.
And every time you played, the more you like it.
The more I like it. I think the first game, it was just like a complete overload. Like there's so much information in the game. It is so hectic, especially if you're using a timer for the negotiations, which you kind of want to do to keep everything in like within a reasonable time limit. And the second game, I was kind of like catching up. I'm not just like completely like overwhelmed the whole time. Mm. And by the third game, I was, you know, I had the matrix brain. I could see the digits and the numbers, the code written in front of me.
Yeah, see, I think I still need that third game to get there. I really love the second second game that we played, that experience. The main problem for me is that I loved it, but then afterwards, whenever I hear about CD Real Confluence and think about it, I feel there's some criticism to have, like that the game is so big and the table is so big that it's really hard to keep up with everyone at the table. So many times you're just trading with like your neighbors or then if you go to the other side of the table, then you lose on all the possible trades that you could have done. And the time constraint of those trades actually affect quite a lot, which make for good game pacing, but make for bad kind of potential decision making. So I think I need to get that third game so that it's not that heavy, the decision making. But I also feel that maybe this third game will maybe make my decision towards the opposite side. Like, yeah, this game is kind of has a lot of broken parts. I don't know, broken parts. It's just like, it's too much for a negotiation game.
It is absolutely too much, but I love it because of it. It's like too much, and because of it's too much, there's everything in the game.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But also, if you don't have people that are willing to negotiate with you, then it can break apart.
Yeah, but if you're playing with, let's say, 7 people, hey, move on to the next person.
That is true. That is true. But then again, 7 people, too much to keep up.
Get off your seat. Get on your feet. Walk around the table. Go on the other side.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah, yeah.
That was my number 3, CD Real Confluence.
My number 3 is a party game that I've never really played this version of this party game, but it's a very similar game to Telestrations. But this particular game, which is the one that I played this year, it's called Scroll, and it's the adult version of Scroll. There's a family version and an adult version. And if anybody has played the more famous Telestration, I think it's more famous than Scroll, you have a clue or you have a topic or you have a phrase that you have to draw. Then you have to pass your little notebook to the next person. And this person, with just seeing your drawing, has to write down what they're seeing. And then the next person gets the same notebook. And instead of, then they see the thing that the last person wrote and they have to draw it. And then the books go around and around until they come back to the original person. So the more people that play this game, the funnier it gets. It's kind of this broken telephone drawing and guessing and drawing and guessing game.
So what type of prompts are in this adult version?
There's like different colors. So some colors are a little bit more spicy than others. But for example, something could be Netflix and chill, right? Another thing could be making a deal with the devil. Another thing could be hitting two birds with one stone. Like, it can be a lot of different things, but there's one color that is quite spicy and talks about like different adult themes, but many of others are like, there's a little bit combination of everything, but the adult version of it, I think, is just one of the colors that is, I think, the pink one or the black one, which is like can be a little bit spicier and talks more about like more adult themes that I don't want to talk out loud. But then it makes it for more ridiculous drawings.
Yes.
And I think it's pretty much Telestrations. Like, the main difference is the prompts that you get and maybe a bit of the rules of how do you get points. I don't remember the exact points. But who cares? Like, this is a game that you don't play for the points. You don't play to win. You play to just create those ridiculous drawings, those ridiculous situations. And I was playing with my family back home in Mexico. And it just... I don't think I've laughed that hard in the entire year. And that is why these type of games, I think Telestrations as well, but the particular Scroll, which is the version that I played, it's always a hit with people. So for sure, a game that I would recommend anyone to play at least once in their life. Scroll is my number 3.
I had one game of Brash. I had one game of Brass Lancashire this year, and the novelty has worn off from the game, but man, do I still enjoy playing it. First of all, it's very fun to figure out what are feasible strategies to you based on your cards, And after that, you get to play this game of trying to outthink your opponents one turn ahead of them. Press Birmingham is the more popular version of Press, but so far Lancashire is my favorite of the two. The fact that there's less industry tiles means that everyone is much more in everyone's way all the time, which really adds to the gameplay of trying to be somewhere one turn before everyone else. People tend to go for Birmingham first because Press Birmingham is number one on BGG and Lancashire is not. But if you enjoy cutthroat interaction and you are wondering whether to get Birmingham or Lancashire, go for Lancashire.
Is everything else the same besides the beer barrels?
So Birmingham has beer, which is a third resource, which I actually find a little bit finicky compared to the iron and coal. In addition to that, the trading is different in Birmingham and in Lancashire. The Lancashire has this foreign trading thing where it's kind of like a little bit of push your luck. There's like an element of randomness there, which I know a lot of people don't like. Personally, I think it's all right. I've never had like a bad thing to say about that element. But the biggest difference in addition to the beer is just the sheer number of the different industries that you can put on the board. In Press Birmingham, it can be like, well, you're doing those pottery things and I'm doing boxes. But in Lancashire, there is going to be for sure competition about who gets to build those shipyards that are the only tiles that will give you those like massive points.
Got it. You've talked so much about it and I still haven't played Brass Lancashire. I think I'm not available when you want to play it. And then the next weekend I'm available. And then because you have just played it, you don't want to play it again with me.
No, that is not true. Because Lancashire is one of those games where I'm like, okay, if we're three or four players, that's my default suggestion. It's always like, hey, and if none of these suggestions work for you, I'm always down for Brass Lancashire.
Yeah, but that's one of those things that with the group, you wouldn't repeat like, hey, let's play, like, we played last weekend, Luis was not here. Let's play this next weekend again, like because the group wants to play something else. I think that's more what happens. But yeah, great game, supposedly. I'm wanting to play it even more now.
That was my number two, Brass Lancashire.
My number two is a game that you can play with any deck of 52 cards plus two jokers. It has a very specific edition that you can purchase pretty cheaply. Obviously, it will be a bit more expensive than a deck of cards, but you can play it with any deck of cards. I think it's worth having it because of the art. Everybody that I played it with comments on the art and how nice the art is. And this game is Regicide. Not the legacy version that came out that was super expensive. It's just simple, basic Regicide. I don't think there's a game in the last, not even half a year, in the last year that I've played more than Regicide. I don't log my plays as well as you, but I can confidently say that I've played this game at least 50 times in the last year and a half because you lose a lot in Regicide because it's a complex game. You're trying to kill jokers and all the queens and all the kings, and there's a specific mechanics of how much damage you make, how do you receive damage. But it's all with just deck of cards. There's the companion app that you can use to track things. You don't need it.
Do you play it solo or two-player or three-player?
I've never played it solo. I played it two, three, and four players.
Yeah.
I think the hardest is four, like the highest number, the harder it is, because then people can make more mistakes. It's harder maybe to get the right amount of cards. That's why you have the jokers, that the more people you play, you have more jokers on the deck. If you're four, then you put two jokers. If you're three, you put one joker. If you're two or one, you don't put jokers, which allow you to break the rules a little bit, those jokers.
And with solo, I feel like it's a little too easy.
You think?
Yes.
Yeah, I think with two, we've played it a lot with Mia, and I think we're quite experienced with it. And it's still every now and then we lose. And it's not one of those things. Sometimes you lose very early, but it's one of those things that you will most of the time lose towards the end of the game. Like there is like that element of luck that doesn't guarantee that, oh, you for sure are going to win the game all the time, which makes it interesting, which makes it worth coming back to. And I think that's why I have enjoyed Regicide so much and also played it with my mom, my sister, my aunt, like a lot of people I played this game with. And it's I enjoy it quite a lot. So that is why it's my number two, Regicide.
I reviewed Guilty Houston 2015 in episode 4. And in that episode, I said that we will try out the next game in the series, Guilty Monaco 1955. But I had some hesitation whether Monaco 1955 will reach the level of Houston 2015, since neither me nor Chilla were really into the theme of formula racing. Let me tell you that Monaco 1955 was an absolute blast, and if I had to pick the better Guilty game between Houston 2015 and Monaco 1955, I'd have to go for Monaco 1955.
Really?
Chilla would go for Houston. Monaco adds this new small mechanic that lets you combine cards and get new leads based on those cards. That mechanic like works really well in the system. It also delivers a really cinematic experience because it manages to build a proper story arc. Of course, this means that Monaco is a bit more railroaded compared to Houston, but I don't personally mind it. I haven't really heard other people talking about these games that much, which makes me a bit fearful giving this game series this much praise. Like, maybe this game is just the perfect detective game for me and Chilla and others. We'll find it average or too long or something, but we honestly love these guilty games and we hope that we will get more of them in the future.
Yeah, you mentioned that Houston you have given to your cousin or something like that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, well, then there's no way to confirm nor deny whether this is your personal bias because you're not giving your friend and co-host Luis the copy that could help you in this dilemma that you have.
I have heard one review in one other podcast about the game, which kind of like they were a bit lukewarm about the game.
Mm.
But they also spent 1 hour playing through the game.
Yeah.
Me and Chilla, we make this like a whole day thing or like a whole evening thing. I think both of the games have like taken 6 hours for us to play.
Mm.
We have dinner, that 6 hour includes dinner. And I feel like that's the way to get the most out of the game. You don't want to rush this experience.
All right. And also, I think a lot of board game reviewers and a lot of people that create content, maybe they don't bother with this type. Very few, I think, bother with exit games, adventure games. Even like some, like puzzle games. I think not a lot of people do unless they're like specifically into that. So I think maybe like people are passing this through for now. And it's if you're not, I'm not mistaken, Houston is from last year or 2 years ago. And then Monaco is from last year. Like they're relatively
both of
recent.
Them, both of them were released in Essen last
2024.
Year. Yeah.
So they are also still pretty new. So it might be that they catch up. All right. Yeah. Interesting games. For sure. I'm looking forward to it. I think Mia is a little bit like up and down with this, not with the deduction games, but with like puzzle games. I think some of them we have played, she really likes, some of them kind of like, eh. So I think it's a complex sale, but for sure it's something I'm interested to try.
That was my number one, Guilty Monaco 1955.
All right. My number one is a game that I'm completely biased because we were playing this game or right after playing this game, I proposed to Mia and then we became engaged. So I could not put it on not on number one without probably risking some severe repercussions at home. This is the only Splendor game that matters and it's Splendor Jewel. It is a fantastic two-player game. I've played this multiple times with Mia. She really enjoys it for, I think, also biased reasons, but I think the game itself without the bias was already something we were enjoying. We played it for the first time in London. We played in Drofts, this board game bar, and we liked it so much that and got the bias because of that, that we decided to buy it. And since then, we have played it multiple times. I also took it back home to Mexico and played it with multiple people. And every time I played it, of course, the more I play, the more experienced I am. So it's harder to introduce people to it. But I think still, everybody that has played it, it's still an enjoyable experience. It's still not, maybe it's guaranteed that I'm going to play, but it's also not that I'm going to win, but it's also not an enjoyable experience, at least from them, at least that first time we play. So fantastic two-player game. You can carry it everywhere. It's the only Splendor that matters. As I said, Splendor Duel.
First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Secondly, I do enjoy Splendor Duel, but I just enjoy Splendor, the original game, so much more. I actually played Splendor Duel a couple weeks ago at the meetup. And there, I think it like hit me like, okay, what's the big hang up I have with Splendor Duel? In Splendor, on your turn, you're just like picking up cards, you're picking up chips. So your turn goes pretty fast. And the flow of the game is like very fast.
Mm.
Splendor Duel, it's not a slow game, but it is slower than Splendor.
Yeah.
Which means that like that small friction that's there, it kind of like, it messes with my brain so that it doesn't give that like instant dopamine hit. It's not, doesn't feel like you're playing this like the most addictive mobile game ever made. Which is the feeling I get with original Splendor.
Yeah, because it's a bad game. It's a game where like you don't need to think. There's no interesting decisions. There's no pull and pull. That's why Splendor Duel requires a little bit more. Yes, it's good friction.
Yes, I wish we could play 10 games of Splendor right now and I could just like win 10 of those games and just prove you wrong about the luck and the skill factor.
I think if we play 10 games where you win 10, it'll just prove my point that Splendor sucks as a game. But yeah, my number one, Splendor Duel. All right, that is it for our list. We'll do a quick recap of the games. Jonas, can you start with your list?
Sure. Number 10, Noosphere Big Box. Number 9, All Bridges Burning. Number 8, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, The Thames Murders and Other Cases. Number 7, The Bottle Imp. Number 6, Exit the Game, Kidnapped in Fortune City. Number 5, Ra. Number 4, Seven Empires. Number 3, Sidereal Confluence. Number 2, Brass Lancashire. And number 1, Guilty Monaco 1955.
All right, a great list. And my list is number 10, Pandemic Legacy Season 1. Number 9, John Company Second Edition. Number 8, Zubaris. Number 7, Food Chain Magnate. Number 6, Biblios. Number 5, Micro Macro Crime City. Number 4, The Quest for El Dorado. Number 3, Scroll. Number 2, Regicide. And number 1, Splendor Duel. And those were our lists. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode will air in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Kuulemme siinä.